It is Emma sitting in for Suzanne Radford. Right, let's get into today's show. We've got three fantastic guests in with us this morning. We've got Chef Cesar Bartolini, chef de cuisine at Bread Street Kitchen and Bar at Atlantis The Palm. Good morning to you.
Good morning to you all.
How are you?
Fine, all good.
All good, excellent. We've also got Chef Russell Impiazzi, Culinary Director at La Gourmet. How are you this morning?
All good and quite hungry this morning.
I think that could be a good thing, yep. Judging by the way things are going. And we've also got our regular Thursday brunch panelists, Riyad Hamad, the honeyman from Balqis Honey. Good morning.
Good morning, love. How are you doing, Emma? You all right,
I'm
love?
Good, how are you?
Yeah, good, good. Thank you very much.
Nice and cheerful and smiley as ever.
I know. We're trying. It's a lot of hard work, you know.
So today we're going to talk about picnics and thirst quenchers. It's a bit tough here in the UAE. Obviously, it's so hot during the summer. So we might talk about some indoor picnic options. But what does picnicking mean to you guys?
Carrying loads of bags, struggling with the kids running off, refusing to help, and then finally sitting down and having a nice calming time before we got to pack it all up and then drag it all back to the car. But good, really.
Cesar?
I love picnics. Going out, it's a lot of fun. It's a lot of fun for everyone, for the family or friends, the kids as well. And it's the whole thing of cooking it and enjoying yourself in the outdoors and have a little bite to eat. It's lovely.
Riyad, fan of picnicking?
I do love picnics, and I love going to the parks and stuff. When the weather's a kind of a lot nicer, but it's just the preparation that does me head in. Just does my wife's head in a lot more
because she does it.
While I'm trying to control the kids, but it's just that preparation mode of it just takes you out of you. And by the time you get there, like Russell said, you're dragging the kids, you're dragging all these bags, and you're moving around, and you finally sit there, and you plonk there, and you know you eat and relax, and the thought of packing everything again and going back and doing the whole thing does your head in again. So yeah, but we still love picnics though.
Have we kind of like over complicated it? And we were looking into the history of the picnic and where it kind of originated from. It began life as a 17th century French word in a 1692 edition of something that I'm not going to pronounce because my French is diabolical, but it mentions piquenique as being of recent origin marks as the first appearance of the word in print. As for how the French came by the new term, it was likely invented by joining the common form of the verb piquer, meaning to pick or peck, with a nonsense rhyming syllable, basically to make it sound nice. And it basically what they're saying is, you know, everyone brings their own, a little pick of selection and things. And it sort of progressed from there. But it goes a little bit crazy. And we have everything from posh picnics, romantic ones where it can be seafood, strawberries and all the romantic things, to the traditional British one where we have the Scotch eggs, the pasties, the cucumber sandwiches, the Battenberg cake, always a favourite, and cheese and pickle and things like that. But then Mediterranean picnics where you'd have the cured meats, cheeses, roasted vegetables, the tapas dishes and the breads, and Middle Eastern ones it's got here as well. Pita breads, tabbouleh, hummus, figs and goat's curd salad. So it's nice to see that it is sort of a global feature at the moment. Cesar, I wanted to come to you. Obviously, sort of Mediterranean kind of picnics, what would you put in yours?
A lot of pies and sandwiches and a little bit of sarnies, some wraps, for a few salads, definitely some cheese and pate has to be there, I must say. Crisps, but homemade, yeah, not the ones out of a packet, because they're not very healthy. So a lot of those things, and really a nice lemonade, it has to be there.
I mean, this is the thing with the thirst quencher drinks. What do you take drink-wise with picnics for the summer? And it's hard, isn't it, to make that kind of choice?
Yeah, I mean, well, obviously, because I'm kind of into honey, and I love honey. So we kind of do all these kind of beautiful kind of drinks with honey. So we'll have kind of fruit drinks and, you know, kind of... all these amazing kind of fruits just kind of blended with ice, and throwing some honey in there just to sweeten up a bit more, take a bit of the sourness out of it. Just take it with you, and some smoothies and stuff. So there's loads of stuff that you can take with you. Yeah, loads.
sounds fantastic. Russell, what about you? What would your...
Oh, I'm a traditional guy. I'm a Scotch egg and homemade sausage rolls and sorry, but crisp out of a packet. You know,
it's, they're the best things, then.
It's a treat, Walkers. Right? You don't do it every day. And I think it's if you can eat it with your hands, it's easy to eat. Yeah, no knives and forks and nothing like that. You got to get your fingers sticky.
And so coming back to the Scotch eggs, we did do a bit of divulging and found out that Harrods do a Scotch egg made with ostrich eggs.
Wow, that's going to be a big old...
It's a big one, isn't it? It's a big one.
The whole family.
Yeah. It's a big one.
How does that even work? It's going to take forever to cook and you'd have to divvy it up. It's going to feed about 10 people, one of those things.
3 kilos Scotch egg, right?
Lafayette do an amazing, by the way, Scotch egg. I'm not kind of trying to promote Russell's, but they do an amazing Scotch egg, actually. It's delicious. I've had it with some salads and stuff, so I can kind of vouch for them if anybody's interested in a top-notch kind of Scotch egg.
It always seems to me as one of those things that seems a little bit tricky to make. Is it, or can it be made quite easily?
You can. You've got to get your egg right, you know, a 2.5 minute boiling, so it's still nice and soft in the middle, and getting your sausage mix right at the end. I mean, we use lots of herbs as well, a lot of sage, a lot of onion in the mix as well. Breadcrumb it, deep fry it quickly. Mm-hmm. So you're keeping that soft, nice yolk, nice and soft.
Okay.
So yeah, there you go.
And it's not greasy either, yours. It's not greasy, you know, it's not the
Lafayette. Shouldn't be.
I mean, that's the thing that you get with a lot of the mix. It can be like deep, people fry them or whatever, and they get a bit oily sometimes.
Yeah, or you know, your yolk's hard and that kind of takes away the pleasure when you're cutting through it and you see that lovely yellow yolk oozing out and you think, oh, win.
That sounds so good. We'll continue this conversation and I want to see what news you guys have got coming up very shortly, and then we will get into some food tasting, which we haven't done for a few weeks here on the Thursday brunch, so very excited about that. It's Emma sitting in for Suzanne. So I wanted to go around the room and see what news you guys have got at the moment. What's happening with you and your outlets? Have you got anything you want to share with us? Russell, let's start with you. What's going on?
Okay, we've got a lot going on. Well, obviously, the big one is opening of City Walk. We opened the grill concept in April. Lovely little restaurant, grill and rotisserie based. And it's part of the bigger concept, which is going to be next door, which is based on the Dubai Mall principles of the multi-kitchen experience. It's a new upgraded look and feel, so I'm excited about that. We've got a beautiful mezzanine where we're putting a demonstration kitchen in, so there's lots of fun to be had with that. Dubai Mall, we're kind of repositioning ourselves a little bit there. We're taking stuff out and moving bits and pieces around. So if you've not been for a while, come check out and see what we're doing. Our events and catering is doing really well, as usual. The guys have had a busy Ramadan, which was great. So yeah, the next 3 or 4 months there's some exciting stuff coming up, so looking forward to it.
Sounds good. Caesar, what about you? What's new?
We got a lot planned for the second half of the year. We're working on a pie and a pairing night, classical British pies that will change.
Let me know
on
when
a weekly
it is
base.
So I'll be there.
We also revamping our brunch drink package offer for the family brunch on the Fridays. And then we have one or two more things coming up. Our 1 year, second year anniversary from Bread Street Kitchen is coming as well. So a lot of the little surprises installed for them.
It's been 2 years already.
2 years, yes.
Oh. Time flies.
Yes.
It really does. Riyad, what's new in the world of honey?
Of honey, yeah. Well, we had an amazing shipment. Remember, we went to New Zealand with Suzanne and we were there for, it was an amazing experience. We were there for about 10 days. And we partnered up with this amazing beekeeper and with this family. It's an estate it's about 10,000 hectares of land. It was just unbelievable, and they have the most amazing manuka trees and honeydew trees. And we've got this shipment that's come in, and we're going to be distributing it to all our outlets of manuka. So the new kind of manuka, sort of Bilqis honey, is going to be out and about in the next sort of week in all the outlets. And it's been amazing, yeah, getting this manuka. We've been waiting for a while. It takes quite a while to harvest, and it's beautiful. It really is beautiful.
Lucky enough to try it yesterday. It was. I got a sneak peek yesterday, and it's just not the usual manuka that's quite quite harsh on the palate. This one's really nice. It's a good one.
It's smooth. It's so smooth. Yeah. It is medicinal. It's kind of like a natural antibiotic. It's so much so good for your immune system. So good for your digestive system. It's just an amazing sort
of
natural.
This one tastes nice as well.
This does. Yeah. I mean, it's quite refreshing. It's got some lovely little sort of lemony tones to it. It's got this kind of little herbal. That's not sort of aggressive. It's very smooth and amazing taste profiles.
Am I correct in thinking that Manuka honey only comes from New Zealand?
It comes from New Zealand, but Australia has it as well.
Okay.
So Australia has Manuka trees, but the most famous sort of Manuka really is from New Zealand, and it is kind of known throughout the world, and it's one of these things that kind of the people assume that the real Manuka comes from New Zealand. And honestly, going there and tasting it and seeing how dedicated the beekeepers are there, you realise that it's sort of magical.
And seeing as we're happy to have you in the studio today, because there's a story that I wanted to follow up with you that we were discussing last week about honey laundering, which is something that I found absolutely crazy. And basically, these honeys that you might find in the supermarket that are being sold as pure honeys are being basically cut with sweet corn syrups or other things. So it's not pure honey. So how do you feel about all of this?
Well, I mean, one of the reasons why we kind of started this was simply because I couldn't get any amazing honey out, you know, for myself to basically consume and eat myself. And it was one of the reasons why I started the whole sort of Bilgis, you know, honey. And because the majority of honey that's in the supermarkets is kind of pasteurized, it's not raw, and so it's kind of bankrupt of a lot of vitamins and minerals and sort of trace elements, and raw honey is a beautiful medicinal kind of liquid, and it's one of these natural kind of superfoods that, you know, if you kind of take it and you commercialize it and you kind of pasteurize it, and in order to handle it better, because that's what a lot of the commercially they do, they sometimes pasteurize it to such an extent so they can just get it easily, get it in the bottles, or that it looks prettier when it's kind of, when they've boiled it becomes kind of more of a golden color. So but when that happens, you've taken away all the benefits of it completely and utterly. It's kind of rendered itself just as a kind of a sweetener like a syrup, effectively, and that's the issue. And it's unfortunate that a lot of countries around the world are doing this. They're absolutely killing it everywhere, and they're boiling it. And I mean, I remember reading a story that was in America, where China sent honey to America to sell, obviously, and they found something like it was literally sugar water. There was no honey, there was no natural in any trace elements whatsoever. It was literally sugar water, and it's completely adulterated. And so you need to be really careful about, you know, what you buy, and seeing the word raw on a jar of honey gives you the indication that it's not been heavily processed, it's not been super filtered, and all the kind of trace elements and vitamins are going to be in it.
Fantastic. So now we know that's good. What to look out for. All right, let's get through a couple of these.
Food news.
We've got some food news stories for you this morning. Russell, this might be one for you that we pulled out, seeing as you mentioned the sausage rolls earlier. I'm sure you're aware of this story. The outcry, particularly from the UK, by the US claiming to invent sausage rolls.
That was naughty.
So basically what they've done, they've taken just a sausage. It's not even sausage meat. They've just taken a sausage and wrapped it in puff pastry and called it a puff dog. And everyone's like, hang on, these things have been around for like 100 years or so.
It's a sausage roll. Puff dog, my goodness.
But I don't even know where this has stemmed from. I mean, it's just come up with something original.
I know, right? Shocking. Leave our sausage rolls alone, all right?
But it doesn't even look good.
It looks terrible, doesn't it?
It doesn't look good. Right. It looks horrible and just not nice at all. But as you can imagine, social media went into complete meltdown over this. All the jokes came out, and stop reinventing the wheel and leave things like that well and truly alone. But we tend to find this a lot. Other countries go, oh, we invented this or whatever. And everyone's like, well, actually, you might not have done at all. So that's one that caught our eye this week. Have you got a food news story for us?
I have, actually. This is one from our friends in Kentucky, and the clue's in the name there. Like, I'm all for recycling, and this one's taking food and fashion, I think, to a whole new level. The Meg C. Jewellery Gallery in Lexington, Kentucky has introduced a line of necklaces and earrings made of gold-plated Kentucky Fried Chicken bones.
Ugh, God.
And the price, $130 to $200. So not so much of a bargain bucket there, but, I mean, who does that?
But why?
Exactly, right? And it, clearly there's a business because they're there and they're selling.
So, wow. I can't get my head around this one. So have they've obviously taken the chicken, eaten the flesh off the chicken, and then gold-plated the bones. Is that what's happening?
And there's $200, please.
Oh. That's shocking, isn't it? I mean, imagine walking around with little bones jiggling around your neck.
Gold-plated
bones jiggling around your neck from a Kentucky. I mean, it's just blinking vulgar, yeah. Isn't it?
I mean, I can imagine, like, you get the shark's teeth necklaces and things like this when you go to some certain countries, or the necklaces made out of bone or shells or that, but the traditional jewellery, but this just seems weird.
All right, it's
me.
Kentucky, celebrating Kentucky. That's the way I see it. So good luck to them.
Lovely. Caesar, have you got a food news story for us?
I do, and UK has voted broccoli as their favourite vegetable. Broccoli apparently, you know, I love broccoli, to be honest. There is a lot of ways that you can use broccoli in your dishes. It doesn't have to be always the boring way.
It's the one vegetable that all my three kids eat.
Really?
Yeah. They don't fight over it. And I say, oh, what's it? It's the broccoli's on the plate. Oh, they're good. They're golden.
And it's super healthy. It's very good for you. And, you know, we are doing on our new menu, for example, a broccoli and Stilton cannelloni, which is, you know, a little different on the traditional take of cannelloni. But, yeah, broccoli is very good. Not just steam. It's not had to be always boring, you know. You can grill it on the barbecue. It's very versatile and very good for you.
You can juice the stem as well, just a little bit. We use the whole stem as well, slice it up nice and thin, stir fry it. The whole thing can be used. People just throw this to keep the florets and throw the stem away, but the stem's great.
Yeah, I've tried that.
Stir fry it up, it's lovely.
But it gives me horrendous gas that when I do that, actually, if I'm honest. I did it kind of the other week, and it was one of the worst things that I did. I did, yeah. It really messed me up. Like raw, what do you call it, broccoli, like juiced. Oh, God.
A little bit.
No, it messed me up. That really did mess me up. It really did.
But broccoli is one of those vegetables. If it's done right, it's fantastic. Yep. You see, I have horrible nightmares of it from school dinners where it's just boiled till it's just this limp, wet, tasteless green thing on your plate.
As you said, on the barbecue grill, a little bit of lemon juice, a little bit of olive oil.
Season
delicious.
It.
Yeah, really nice.
We're getting better at it, I think, that's for sure. I'm going to round off with this one. It's the age-old thing, and I love it when these stories come around. The old, is it safe to eat food off the floor? It's the five-second rule. It's the five-second rule thing. So scientists, they basically took a piece of moist cake, because moist foods obviously pick up bacteria a lot quicker than anything that's dry. So they dropped it on a kitchen floor for 5 and 30 seconds, and then they did the same outside on the pavement, and obviously under microscope on the pavement it picked up a lot more bacteria, because obviously it's a lot dirtier than one would hope our kitchen floors are if we clean them well enough, but basically they're saying it's fine, so long as it's not left there for ages. A little bit of bacteria never did anyone any harm. We need to be exposed to these things to, you know, do our immune systems good, but don't eat things off the street.
So the 5 second rule works in the kitchen.
Yes.
No, it works at home also. Like you have your kids, like they
at
pick
home
up
in the kitchen. Yes.
Everything off the floor and stuff like that. They eat and it builds your immune system. There's nothing wrong with it, you know.
And you've got to blow it. That there's a big difference when it just drops and then you just pick. No, you can't do that. You've got to pick it up from the floor, blow.
Blow the germs
and
off.
Eat it. Because that somehow it nullifies, it kills, it exterminates, you know, all the germs. Yeah.
That's a new one. That's good to know. You learn something new every single day. Right, before we go to the ARN News Centre for an update, we've got to do one of these.
Guess the ingredient.
And today, if you can guess the mystery ingredient, you could be winning yourself a table for two adults and two children for the Family Friday brunch at Bread Street Kitchen, if you can tell us what this is.
Okay, there's a lot of big words in this, so bear with me. Evidence of a prehistoric consumption of today's mystery ingredient has been found in caves by archaeologists by the earliest written mention of today's mystery ingredient. It comes in a Greek book dating back to 300 BC. Ancient Romans took today's mystery ingredient on their campaigns, and the fruit was reintroduced to England by the order of King Henry VIII, who had tasted them on a visit to Flanders.
We've got our wonderful chefs in the studio, Chef Cesar Bartolini, Chef de Cuisine at Bread Street Kitchen and Bar at the Atlantis, Chef Russell Impiazzi, Culinary Director at Le Gourmet, and the honey man, it's Riyad Hamid from Balki's Honey as well. And we've just brought some goodies into the studio, so let's start off with the thirst quenchers that you've brought in. They're looking really good, so tell us what you guys have brought in, what's in them.
Well, today I brought a classic lemonade, a homemade lemonade, so a bit of sugar, touch of sugar in there, some nice fresh lemon, some mint in there, lemon juice and stuff. And then I brought a little different one, different version, with a red berries and a bit of strawberry, same sort of base, of sugar, water, soda water, bit of lemon in there, so more like a homemade pink lemonade with some pomegranate as well there, which is very good for you.
And how long does it normally take to make these? How long do you have to leave the fruit in the juices in the water so that it absorbs all the flavor?
Because it's all like sliced very small and or chopped up, you can do it just before you leave for your picnic.
Right.
Then you can leave it right to the last minute, take it with you, and then take a bit of soda water and just put it over it on the spot.
And I guess you can put any kind of fruit that you want in these. You can do whatever you want.
Yeah, pretty much. You could do any flavor that you like.
That's absolutely delicious. Very refreshing. Sometimes I find lemon can be a bit tacky on the palate, you know, or if it's sticky or sugary, but that's absolutely delicious. And what have you put? You just put soda water in there to give it a little bit of
that fizz. Yeah.
Which is good. And Russell, what have you got? So
we've got two. I've made a lovely peach and honey iced tea. And yes, it is your honey, Mr. Riyad. And we've made a lovely yuzu apple and lime. Little cocktail. We served this over iftar and got some really good feedback. It's super refreshing. It's really nice. So yeah, easy to make. And the good thing, if you're taking any beverages on a picnic, you know, everyone's got jam jars or honey jars in their closet, right, or in the fridge. And when they get empty, don't chuck them away. Keep them and put your beverage in the freezer the night before. And you know, not only do they keep your picnic cold, but you got a lovely cold drink as well by the time it's melted a little bit. So,
and you can always chuck the jars after. You don't have to bring them back.
So, you know, it's a nice little tip there.
Or you can, you know, everyone's going for the thing of using jam jars as beverage holders at
the
moment.
Right. So you can drink out of it and you freeze it. So yeah,
they're absolutely beautiful. I mean, honestly, they're just so kind of delicious. The honey ones are just amazing. That what is it called?
The yuzu.
The yuzu, kind of lemony. Yeah, that's very citrusy, isn't it? Kind of bursting.
Yeah.
It really is kind of, it's a real thirst quencher. It's beautiful.
Yeah,
cool. And this lemon one is really good as well. I mean, it's one of those kind of citrusy drinks that just completely goes crazy in your gob and just kind of quenches that thirst. You know what I mean?
And it's something that you need, particularly in this weather, whether you're having a picnic or not. It's just something that is refreshing and it's nice. And you, like I say, you can use all sorts of different fruits with these as well.
A nice tea, it's cheap to make. You know, it's whatever tea you've got in your cupboard. I mean, that's quite an expensive tea. We use Mariage Frere, which is the oldest tea house in Paris. We just bought their tea in, so we use their tea. And with Riyad's honey, so it kind of elevates that iced tea experience a little bit. But you know, you can do it Yorkshire tea, lad. You can.
I've never tasted anything like this. Honestly, I mean, it's that drink is just unbelievable. That tea drink. It's. The thing about it is that when people go on about, you know, using the best ingredients and stuff, but it really does has this unbelievable. Makes an unbelievable difference when you're using really good quality ingredients, and it shows. I mean, if you're a foodie and you're into the whole sort of flavor of foods and drinks, when you're using those kind of particular ingredients, it elevates the taste onto another level completely.
Mm.
Sorry, I was just going to say, look, just ingredients matter, right? You know, they make the difference. If you can find the best, use the best, it generally does taste the best.
Absolutely.
And I think people are getting a bit more adventurous and experimental, and they're wanting to make things like this at home as well. I mean, it's fantastic to go out and be able to buy it and have it when you're eating out, but to be able to put it together yourself at home and to have the ingredients that you need widely available to you, it's very easy for people to do these days.
Yeah, of course it is. Get out and find them. Make the effort, because when you find them, and you do come across these amazing ingredients. I mean, the first time I tried Riad's honey, it was just one of those light bulb moments. Like, wow, it's so simple, it's so pure, it's unadulterated. And you taste the difference. It's really incredible.
I was going to ask you, with the honey one, how do you, because obviously you've got so many different types of honey, whether it's floral on it, mixed with different ingredients. So obviously, depending what type of honey you use will affect the flavour as well.
Yeah, I mean, the cedar one that you have is my favourite. It's got these lovely caramel tones to it. The wildflower one is exactly that. It's very floral, and you kind of have what recipes you're playing with, whether you're doing something that's quite rich and deep in flavour, like our date pudding. We use the cedar honey, and if you're doing like a ricotta cheese as a savoury and want to blend that sweet and savoury thing together, the wildflower works much better.
You like the Socotra honey as well, from the island of Socotra.
Yeah, that's a new one. It's like treacle. It's incredible. Yeah, it's really nice.
And I like the fact that, Caesar, with yours, you put the soda water in to give it the little bubbles or everything. I've got a little factoid for you guys here, because I did a little bit of research to try and find scientifically the best thirst-quenching drink. Any idea what it would be? Pop quiz.
Oh.
Lemonade?
Tonic water?
Bingo. Actually, seltzer water, so fizzy carbonated water, surprisingly, apparently is the most thirst-quenching drink. I thought it would just be plain old water, but no, apparently carbonated water is
so the bubbles wake your palate up.
There you go.
That's a good thing, but yeah, not bad at all. So this is obviously something that you can make easily for a picnic. Any other of your favourite thirst-quenching drinks that you guys like?
I love these kind of smoothies that I make, and it's really just taking whatever is kind of about to go moldy, all the fruits that are just feeling a bit soft, get it in the blender.
Oh, that's when they're the best, though, right?
Exactly, exactly.
Sugars are ready to go.
And I don't discriminate either. I'll put whatever is in there, whatever is available. So the bananas, and you know, whether it's some lemons, or you've limes, or whether there's some of the berries, get it in there. And because obviously it's a bit sour, there's a tartness to it. And the way to break that is having the honey. So with some beautiful water and some ice, and just blend it. And honestly, you think you're drinking something that's been made for kings. You know, just delicious, and it's simple. It's so simple.
But this is the thing, we have so many things at home that we can make these with. Iced teas, as we were saying, is a really popular one. You can just make a giant batch of it with flavoured tea, or put fruits in your tea, stick it in the fridge with some ice cubes or whatever.
Exactly.
And it's just really easy, and green tea makes a good a little bit of a twist on the traditional iced tea as well. But they're very popular. Iced tea is popular here, and I think they're gaining in popularity.
Again, because you can play with the flavours, you know, say you put whatever fruit you want in there, you know, and we've mix that with some peach, bit of peach puree in there, so that's what you're tasting. But the iced tea, again, it costs nothing, and fresh lemonade is beautiful.
And how easy? I always get confused with the lemonade. And literally, just break it down to me. How would you make a basic fresh lemonade?
So you need your lemon juice.
Yeah.
A bit of sugar. Or honey, we can do honey.
Honey, please.
Yes, it's a bit healthier. I always put some mint in it, and some slices of lemon, and your soda water.
And that's it.
That's it.
That's easy. Because I was going to ask you, would you prefer sugar or honey for the sweetness? Because we're all like, sugar, bad, bad, bad. Use natural sweeteners if you can.
Sugar's bad, 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 until you try the Bakewell tart that I just saw outside. Right? So I'm going to sit on the fence on that one for this morning.
Okay, fair enough. That's fair enough. But I've got a little list here. And diluted fruit juices, because obviously, again, coming back to the sugar thing, some of the natural fruit is great, but again, it has a lot of natural sugar in it, so people
but the
are
key
saying
word
just
is natural
too.
The key word is natural. You know, I think, you know, sugar's been demonized, and probably quite rightly so in some areas, but I'm kind of the the theory that if it's coming from a natural product, it's a natural sugar, I'm kind of thinking that's okay, rather than, oh God, you've got to dilute it, and then you're diluting the flavour and you're not getting the same experience. You're not drinking 15 litres of it a day, surely it can't be bad for me. So I'm kind of, that's kind of where I am on that one with the natural sugars.
And the thing is with some of the natural sugars, I mean, in particular, like with honey, because it doesn't spike your glycemic index, it doesn't spike your blood kind of just through the roof. It's actually, because raw honey has got this unbelievable ability, is a sort of, it adapts into your system, and it's a slow release of sugar. So you're not going to get that kind of spike that's kind of going to make you a bit weird, like having a Mars bar or anything like that. It's just going to kind of, you know, it relaxes, it gives you the energy just to keep pushing yourself along. It's not a kind of a crazy spike. And I think that's the difference with the refined sugar. You know, these refined sugars, they are dangerous, there's no doubt about it, but it's the sugars that you take, is the quality and the type of sugar, like what Russell said, is that's important.
I'm going to trust Mother Nature on that one.
Yeah. So, but you see, you have to limit yourself as well. You can't kind of go overboard. I mean, I go overboard, but you know, that's kind of me. But you have to limit yourself, you know.
Okay. And so one thing that comes highly on a lot of these lists for thirst quenching, being good for you, rehydrating everything, coconut water. How do you guys feel on the coconut water front?
I love it. I think it's great. Obviously, it's a big, big interest the last couple of years. But look, I mean, there's nothing more satisfying than me and getting a young coconut, cracking the top open, sticking a straw in it, and away you go. It's fantastic. It's really nice.
And you get a lot of, you can flavour it as well with other fruit juices if you want to.
Yeah,
I'm
kind of au naturel on that one.
Caesar, you're screwing your face up. You're not a fan?
No, I'm not a fan of coconut water, no.
Is it, what is it that you don't particularly like it about it?
I don't know, it's just the flavour, to be honest. I do like coconut, but it's just the water and
I think he's mad. I absolutely love the stuff. I drink loads of it. If I was ever going to be a fruit, I'd probably be a coconut. I've got the shape of a coconut, actually. Maybe that's just a sympathy love for a coconut, because I've developed the shape. But I love it. Yeah,
Of a watermelon person.
Oh, watermelon is another good one. That's another good one.
Very refreshing.
So, Russell, I was going to ask you, seeing as you do like the coconut water, what would you put in it to maybe spice it up a little bit?
Not a great deal, to be honest, because, like I said, I like the when it's really, really cold, straight from the fridge. You know, it's just some ice, maybe a slice of lime, and I'm good.
Something a bit different. That sounds good. All right, then, cracking stuff. We've got some tasting to do shortly, and we've got some more lovely foods to go through. Let's do another one of these.
Guess the ingredient.
It is your chance to win a table for two adults and two children for the Family Friday brunch at the Bread Street Kitchen. If you can guess today's mystery ingredient, what is our second clue?
Okay, so the Japanese name for today's mystery ingredient translates as virtuous blossom. It is known for its short but brilliant blooming season, a natural process that metaphorically describes human life. Today's mystery ingredient symbolizes beauty, courtesy, and innocence, as well as the trans science of life.
Wow, that's a crazy clue. Today's guests in the studio. We've got some great chefs with us. We have Chef Caesar Bertolini, chef de cuisine at the Bread Street Kitchen and Bar out of the Atlantis, Chef Russell Impiazzi, culinary director at Le Gourmet, and the honeyman, it is Riyadh. He's in from Balki's Honey. So tell us, what's the first thing you've put out on the plate there today? What Russell's stuffing his face already. So who wants to go first and describe this? What have you got on the plate?
We got a tweak on the traditional sausage roll.
Okay.
So we got a bit of veal, spices in there, a hint of chili, and we mix it with a bit of beef as well. So a little tweak, but
good. It's good. Good sausage roll. Yep.
Lovely that.
Go on, give us a little bit more than good. Get it to describe.
Well, no, I like the way the heat comes through, a little bit of the chili. The herbs are really good. The pastry's lovely. So that's the key thing on a good sausage roll. How much mess you make eating a sausage roll is always a good sign.
I love that. You know, when you're kind of biting into the pastry, and kind of, it just goes all over the place.
That's it.
And that the sort of, it's almost kind of like a creaminess to the meat. It's and a spiciness. It's delicious. It really is delicious.
Because you do so many things with sausage rolls, can't you? You can use lots of different meats in them. And the key, I think one of the key things is getting the pastry right. Is it not? So many people mess up the pastry. I'm hopeless with puff. Can't even say it. Puff pastry. Is there a secret? Is it best to make your own or buy sheeted puff pastry?
What do you think? If you're at home, buy it. Come on, it's so easy. It's good too. My wife makes the best sausage rolls. Sorry, Susan. And a secret ingredient she uses is Paxo.
Really?
She learned that from grandmother's recipe. She blends a little bit of Paxo stuffing in it. And I tell you what, man, the sausage rolls are good. Good. And again, shop-bought puff pastry, delicious. Really good.
And it's one of those simple things you can keep as a snack or it's a meal in itself. Great. Whatever you want to
pack
put
lunch
in it.
As well for the kids. Kids love them as
kids
well.
Kids love them. Yeah.
I'm just having a little pasta here.
We're just diving in.
I've got to throw myself in. You've got to throw yourself in at deep end, haven't you? And it's just beautiful. Is there quinoa in here?
There is a bit of quinoa
and
there.
Some vegetables.
Yes. Some vegetables, potato. It's a trick on, I would take on the like a Cornish pasty, a vegetarian one there.
It's really nice. I mean, it's beautiful. Again, the puff pastry is just delicious.
Just it gives you an idea of like all the different things you can do at home that with a lot of ingredients that you have laying around in the cupboards, in the fridge and stuff. And it doesn't take an awful lot of time to put them together. So you can pretty much use anything you like, you know, if you're creative.
I got to tell you, pasties are one of my favourite things. Growing up in Devon in the UK, obviously Cornwall is next door. Everywhere sells Cornish pasties and the different ingredients they put in each ones. And they actually, because they used to be for the miners down in the mines, which is why they have this beautiful big piece of pastry that they used to hang on to and then they could eat the rest of it with the filling. But they were doing things so they'd come up with kind of, I don't know really how to describe it, a multi-pasty that was a meal in itself. So you'd have the savoury side and the sweet side. So you'd have main and dessert in one thing, which is amazing. Ever thought about doing that?
No,
I'd love that. I'd be the number one customer for that.
See, this is something we do when we go back to England. We overload on pastry.
Mm. Yeah.
You know, you go down to the local bakers and it's just amazing sausage rolls, amazing Cornish pasties. And it's just, I've just tried the pie. What's the pie?
The pie is also a veal pie with Earl Grey jelly.
Yeah. It's really good. Okay, good pastry.
So how do you, I'm curious about the jelly. For me, it's a bit of a weird texture thing. So how do you infuse it with the Earl Grey tea in that?
So just as any other tea you will make at home, just you make your tea and then you add your jelly into it. Top tip to do with the jelly when you put in the pie is that the jelly has to set quite a bit before you actually put it in. Otherwise, the pie will absorb all the liquid and you won't have any jelly.
And again, pies, it's one of those things that there's so many possibilities with so many different ingredients that you can put in them. It's basically how crazy is your imagination.
For the pie crust, what we do, we use a little bit of beef fat as well. Mm-hmm. And it just makes a lovely crust. It's really, really nice.
So what would be your favourite pie filling?
I'm a classic meat pie guy. You know, there's nothing more satisfying than me. And my mum makes it, bless her. Every time I go back to England, first thing there is a big pie. You know, and she cooks it all day. And again, just good pastry, good pie. I love it. Love it.
I mean, we always talk about, you know, trying to do healthy options of things. I think pies and pasties are one things that you just can't. It kind of ruins it, does it not?
Yeah, some things just leave them alone, you know.
Riyad, favourite kind of filling for pies or pasties?
I love, I'm trying to kind of cut down on the meat. I really am. I've not really had any meat for 8 months until now because I thought this sausage roll was kind of like a veggie one because I'm so used to my wife making me veggie sausage rolls and I've gone and shoved it in my mouth without thinking. But that's like I do a lot of the time, but that's all right. It does taste beautiful, but I love kind of pies that have got like a chicken and vegetable pie. I just love those chicken and vegetable pies, but because I've kind of steering off towards the meat, there's this amazing kind of meat substitutes, like, you know, the chicken corn meat, and I love that.
I've never really got meat substitutes. Isn't that a vegetable?
What about if I bring you those meats, and you, because they make unbelievable pies. I've actually, when I was eating the meat, I had that chicken pie which was one of the most unbelievable pies I've ever had. And their crust is really, it's a proper crust. It's a proper pie. And it was delicious. So, but yeah, so I would recommend, I'll give you the meat, that corn meat, and then you can make me a pie. How's about that, Russell?
All right, we'll do the peppy challenge with the pies, right?
Okay, yeah. And we'll see if it's kind of right.
So what, I always get confused again with the pastries. What is the best kind of pastry to use with different sort of pies? Because you can have puff pastry toppings, the short crust pastry, and all kind of, what are the best ones to use in different situations?
For a classic meat pie, I like a good short crust pastry. And again, when you render that bit of beef fat in there as well, it does make a big difference. And season it well, a little bit of rock salt in there as well. When you're biting, you get a little bit of flakes of salt in the pastry. Oh, it's delicious.
Caesar, what about for you?
Yeah, I agree. It depends what sort of pie you're making. You know, we always think that you have to use a short crust or puff pastry on a pie, but I like, for my fish pies, for example, I like to top them up with some nice mash, for example.
And it seems to be one of those dishes that people like to keep traditional. We don't like to mess around with it too much, do we, really?
But sausage rolls for me, puff pastry, all the way. Mm. So, you know, got that lovely flaky, messy, crumbs everywhere kind of experience when eating your sausage roll.
The one thing I really don't want to see, which seems to be a trend at the moment, is the whole deconstructed meals and stuff like that that the hipsters have been bringing in. Just leave the pies alone. We don't want any deconstructed pies or sausage rolls or anything like that. Fantastic stuff. We are heading up to the top of the hour. We'll catch up with the ARN News Centre very shortly, but we need another clue, please.
Guess the ingredient.
If you can guess this morning's ingredient, you could be winning yourself a table for two adults and two children for the Family Friday brunch at BSK. So what is our third clue?
So today's mystery ingredient is relatively expensive to produce due to the irrigating the crops, spraying, labour, and they're easily damaged by rain and hail. Nevertheless, demand is high. Today's mystery ingredient is harvested using a mechanised shaker which shakes the tree. The mystery ingredient drops off onto a large mat and is mechanically collected and sorted.
We are talking picnics and thirst quenchers today. And in the studio, we've got Chef Caesar Bartolini, Chef de Cuisine at BSK. Also, Chef Russell Impiazzi, Culinary Director at Le Gourmet. And also Thursday brunch regular Riyad Hamid, the honeyman from Balki's Honey. Now, let's talk about the sweets. We've just tried this amazing Bakewell tart, which it's got to be a firm favourite for most people, really. Hasn't it?
You know, it's not something you eat often, but when you do eat it, you think, why don't I eat this so often? It's delicious, really good. Good job, chef.
Caesars, tell us a little bit how you the ingredients for this one and how you make it. Because one of the things for me, obviously, with cherry bakewells is the frangipani, it's the marzipan, the almondy flavour that goes with it. And you've got Morello cherry jam in this one, which I think adds a little bit of something extra.
Yeah, so the tip to have a good cherry bakewell, you need to whip your frangipan mix, like, quite a lot until it turns almost white, very nice, airy and stuff with all the ingredients in there, and the jam filling is also you need good cherries. We make a mix of Morellos that they are more sour, and then you have some Amarena cherries that they are more sweeter. So you have 50-50 with a bit of lemon juice, lemon zest goes in there as well. And then the pastry, you can always do your own sweet pastry, or you can buy really good ones these days. And the thing is, when you bake it, don't overbake it. A lot of people tend to overbake it and it gets quite dry. Mm-hmm. So I will take it out a little bit earlier so it's nice and wet inside.
That, I think that's one thing that we've all commented on, is how moist the Bakewell is, in that it helps kind of all the flavours amalgamate together. Because sometimes, as you were saying, they can be dry if they're overdone. But this is, but so you'd rather them be a little bit more on the moist side than obviously the dry side.
Yeah, that's correct, yeah.
Fantastic.
It's amazing. It is, yeah.
Any tips for any twists on Bakewell tarts that you can think of?
Oh, you could replace the cherries with all sorts. When you have figs in season, you can do a fig Bakewell.
Apricots would work really well too. A nice homemade apricot jam would work really well too. Yeah, strawberries, why not?
And another sweet treat that you've brought over is the chocolate brownies as well. Absolutely fantastic. And I like the thing I like about the brownies, not too sweet. I think sometimes they can be very, very sweet, but these ones aren't. You know, they're more kind of chocolatey than sugary.
Yeah, you need to pick a good chocolate and, you know, with a high chocolate content as well in there rather than the milky ones. Yeah, and the same again, you know, brownies, you can do all sorts of brownie, put like marshmallows in there, any, you know, pecans and whatever.
I think as long as you've got a good base recipe, you know, and good chocolate, then I get creative with it.
And I think with the brownies, it's something that's really fun for children to get involved in making as well, if you're going for a picnic. Why not? You know, help them.
I think it's the one thing that kids love to make, is that chocolate. Anything with chocolate, yeah. Kids love to make, you know, and my kids love making it as well. So
it's just a shame that most of it ends up being licked out the bowl afterwards than actually going in the oven, which happens a lot.
The best part.
But that's our fault, because we do it as well.
It's like, it's not going in the oven, it's going straight in my tummy. That's fine. We've had another SMS in here saying, I always take lots of food to a picnic. You can never have enough to feed the family. Egg mayonnaise is a family favourite. That's a real old school thing, egg mayonnaise, and yet it's so simple to make.
I think it's going back to keeping it simple and eating things on a picnic that you don't eat every day. Your cucumber sandwich, your egg mayonnaise, your prawn cocktail, and your crisps from a packet. You know, it's just easy food that, again, it's treat day. Picnic day should be a treat day.
Well, why not? You can have a little bit of something for everything. I'm going to be asking you all about your food fantasies very, very shortly. So have a think about what that would be. But coming back to, because we've kind of touched on vegans and vegetarianism and bringing the vegetables into the forefront, not on the side of the plates. And an interesting news article that I picked up is that vegans, vegetarians are now reducetarians. Have you heard of this term?
I haven't actually, no.
So basically, for anyone that's tried to cut out meat entirely and failed, Riyad.
Yep, guilty.
There's a new movement which is trying to take a more pragmatic approach. And it's basically, you know how it goes. You try to be a vegetarian or a vegan, but you slip up and you have something for a special occasion. And then it's, no, you're a complete failure. It's terrible. But they're like, we need to be a bit more lenient towards this now. And so a lot of people are kind of taking the opinion of just reducing their meat content or their dairy content. And they might just have it once a week or once a month or every now and again. So I think a lot of people are taking this approach as opposed to becoming a full vegetarian or a full vegan.
I think it's a great start. I mean, I know I've tried it. I think I got to lunchtime and then before I knew it, there's a bit of chicken I was eating. I thought, oh, what am I doing? You know, it's you've really got to commit to it. And it's as a chef, it's difficult, I tell you, because you're in all the kitchens and you're tasting things, you know, here and there. But if you commit to it and you get your mindset around it, look, I think it's a great idea, and it's a good start to that journey.
I think the thing about it is you've got to be around it, the mentality. Like, for 8 months, I've not had any. Today it's kind of, I've collapsed, really. But the thing about it is that in Lafayette, we have a Supernatural Kitchen, which is a raw vegan cafe. And the food that Chef Athena makes there, it's beautiful. It's all raw. It's all sort of veggies and some of the nuts and fruits. And she uses all these amazing ingredients. And you walk away, you're just absolutely full. From these amazing dishes that she makes that look like, you know, sort of proper food. You know, like a bolognese, for example, or a pizza, or a spaghetti. Or
The Portobello burger is my one.
I love that, the Portobello burger. So, and that's completely raw. And it's vegan. So if you're around that kind of mentality and around these kitchens, and you know that they exist, it really is good to kind of treat yourself to it, and because you're treating yourself in the sense that you're giving all yourself this amazing nutrition, you know, especially after this kind of catastrophic event that I've just done, eating this kind of big well tart, I need to make up for it somehow. But yeah,
And I think it's getting hard. I mean, becoming a vegetarian or a vegan is really hard. It is hard work. And I think a lot of people get stuck because they don't know what to make with the things that they have. So learning how to cook and use certain protein replacements is half the battle. I know I struggle with that sometimes. I'll eat fish, but I don't eat really any other meat. But the cravings sometimes get a little bit on top of you. I get where that comes from. But it can be really difficult. So I think this is a good way to go.
Absolutely. And I think it's all about kind of, you know, your mentality, your approach to it. And I think if you kind of, you know, convince yourself that really this is a sort of better way to live, and you're inspired by, I mean, the way Chef Athena was really convincing me to kind of move away from meat was just all the body of evidence of, you know, and videos and YouTubes and all these kind of things that just educate you. It's really about kind of a process of education in terms of how the body kind of works at its optimum in a better way that you feel more at peak performance. But you know, the other side of it is people want that meat, they want the protein or whatever, so there has to be a balance. But I think if there's a lot of plant-based sort of diet in there, then I think it's good.
But Russell, I loved your analogy that we need to put vegetables in the middle of the plate.
Definitely. It's great. There's some great stuff. There was some beautiful rainbow chard in the kitchen the other day from Greenheart Organic Farms. And it's just incredible stuff. So get creative with it. And that's a good thing about technology as well. Get on YouTube. If you're not sure and you know you're struggling in the kitchen but you want to learn, you know, A, come and see us and we'll help you with it. Or go on YouTube and just search it. I mean, there's some really cool stuff out there.
But there's so many options. I mean, obviously, Cezu is saying as well, in your restaurants and in your work, you come up with alternatives as well of the classics. So there's something for everyone, really.
Yeah, and it is beautiful. I went there, I took my brother there a couple of months ago to his restaurant. I'm not going to say it because it's too long, his restaurant's name, so I'm not going to say it. His bread kitchen, whatever. It's lovely. It was really good. I had the Wellington, and it is delicious.
Wellington.
The vegetarian Wellington, and it's beautiful with the triple fried chips.
I've got to ask now, triple fried chips, how does that work?
They're actually the triple cook, not triple fried. Oh, okay. But you need a really good variety of potatoes. Yeah, we use Agria potatoes. And then you have to blanch them.
Mm-hmm.
Then you part fry them at low temperature. And then you do the final frying at the high temperature.
And so how does that make them different to normal chips?
The first one, blanch it, it actually takes a lot of the water out of the potato. It sounds funny, but that first blanching water actually takes some of the moisture out. And then when you're frying at a really low temperature, it just softens them up. And then when you get them in a really hot oil, it just and you know, you get a lovely crisp on the outside, lovely fluffy in the middle.
That is it. That is what that's the kind of magic, is that kind of crisp, intense crispiness. When you're biting into it, you hear the pops. And then when you get inside, it's just this kind of fluffy, creamy potatoness that just kind of, you feel that you're floating.
That's amazing.
Yeah, you have to rough them up when you blanch them. Rough them up nearly to the point that they start breaking a little bit. So the oil will get
the fluffy edges, right?
Inside. Yeah, make them even crispier.
It's just a simple thing. It's just like crispy and fluffy chips. Does it? All right, I'm going to come back and we'll ask you about your food fantasies after we've caught up with the ARN News Centre. But first, we need another one of these.
Guess the ingredient.
It is your chance to win a table for two adults and two children for the Family Friday Brunch at BSK. If you can guess today's mystery ingredient.
Okay, today's mystery ingredient is very high in antioxidants and contains vitamins C and A. It's anti-inflammatory, contains melatonin for healthy sleep, and the sour variety of today's mystery ingredient activates receptors in our bodies that may help lower chances of heart disease and a stroke.
In the studio with me today are Chef Cesar Bartolini, Chef de Cuisine at BSK at Atlantis de Palma, Chef Russell Impiazzi, Culinary Director at Le Gourmet, and also a Thursday brunch at regular Riyad Hamid, the honeyman from Balki's Honey. And I think we need to do this.
Food fantasy.
Let's do the food fantasy then. Who wants to go first? Cesar, you can go first. What's your food fantasy?
Combination of food fantasies. And it's more like a food trip. So my fantasy would be go on a hunt of exotic, crazy, unheard of foods, like with Anthony Bourdain, to be quite honest. So travel the world for a few months, eating all these things and no one ever heard of, or crazy things like fish eyes and brains and scorpions and all these other these foods that they're delicacies for other cultures. And you know, we might think they're crazy and all sorts, or that's disgusting, whatever it is, but you know, people eat them. They might taste good, you know, with a bit of an effort.
You try it. That's what I say to my kids. Don't try it. You're never going to know. I'm going to eat that snake eye, you know.
Is there anything that you wouldn't eat, though, after you've said all that?
Not too sure. No, I think I had to be there and then and the moment. But, you know, I will definitely try to have a little taste if it's something that is putting me off a lot. But I will definitely give it a go.
Okay. And you had something else as well?
No, that,
I mean, that sounds like the ultimate bush tucker trial, doesn't it?
Yeah, exactly.
Terrible. Russell, did you have a food fantasy?
Well, I'm going to keep mine picnic themed. We're going back to that desert island again with no phones, no iPads, no Wii, so the kids aren't fighting. Peace and tranquility and just time and good food. There you go. Easy. I'm easily pleased. Just give me peace and quiet.
Fair enough.
He's a simple man, isn't he?
No kids screaming and fighting, and my wife is calm and happy, and you know, and give me a cheese and pickle sandwich. I'm done.
He's a simple man.
The opposite of me.
I think. Well, my first kind of food fantasy was about just sitting with a mountain of coconuts next to a beach and just stabbing them and drinking all the coconut water, because I love that. But as I've got older, I've become more refined in my taste, my palate and everything. So if I was going to have an ultimate fantasy, if I'm honest, I'd like to imprison every Michelin star chef and create this huge kitchen area and just make them cook for me every single meal. Every meal that I ever have would be cooked by a Michelin star chef, and they will not leave this prison for at least 10 years. So I think that would be my ideal situation.
Mm. That's hilarious. Is there anyone you'd like to delegate to peeling the spuds?
Well, again, definitely. I want good chefs, so I would definitely get Russell for that. He would be my ultimate spud peeler.
Cheers, mate.
And you're going to have to keep them safe, yeah, because it's going to be a lot of riot in the
fights. Their own lodgings. I'd give them their own little helpers, little humpalumpers that are going to help them do everything. And every meal is just going to be, you know, like, and I'll rate each one. So if they're kind of below par, just say, you ain't going out for another 5 years. Just stay there and keep cooking.
You're a bit brave, huh? Imagine telling Gordon that you don't like his meal.
he's a drama queen, isn't he?
Never mind a food fantasy. That's a reality TV show right there. That needs to be pitched to someone. For sure.
Yeah, absolutely. Can't wait for that.
Good luck with that.
Yeah, cheers. Cheers. Thanks, Russell. Spud peeler.
Cheers, mate. I'm promoted.
Yeah. Oh, dear. Let's go back to some of the food that you guys brought in, because there's a lovely array of cheeses over there. Cheeses always go down at picnics. What are the ones that you've brought in today?
So we got a small selection from British cheeses there. A good old aged Lancashire Red Leicester there. So we got Red Leicester, Lancashire Bomber, good old cheddar, and Lancashire goat as well. It's a little bit, it's not the sort of goat cheese as you would think, like soft and creamy. It's more of a semi-hard goat cheese. And yeah, I love cheeses. I could eat cheese every day.
The chutney is always pretty good. The onion, is it onion and raisins? Is it?
Yeah. We got a homemade chutney there going on as well. A good old chutney, queen's paste to go, and some nice crackers. You can't go wrong.
You
with
can't
that.
Go no. wrong, really, can you? No. With some cheese no. and pickle and chutneys and crackers, it's just a nice, and it's kind of a nice. It's a pick at thing, isn't it? You kind of just pick at it through the afternoon or whatever. Yeah. Sit down with that.
You've got your good old piccalilli in there as well. It's very British.
Well, it's picnic, isn't it? It's that quintessential summer British thing, isn't it?
I love it. It really kind of, it's sort of quintessentially sort of British, some of these little things that is made here, the cheeses, the crackers, the piccalilli. It's the sausage rolls. It's lovely. I really like it.
And it tends to be more the hard cheeses and the not the blue cheese. Stilton obviously is the favourite as well, I think.
Stilton's one of those acquired tastes, isn't it? You know, you kind of love it or you kind of dodge it. But there's some great blues out there as well. Scotland's got some great blues. Dunsair Blue, if you want something that's a bit less harsh, a nice sheep's milk. But yeah, lovely. Good.
Russell was telling us just earlier that there's a Stilton perfume.
Yeah, I was reading about this.
Shocking.
Yeah. There's a Eau de Stilton out there. So if you want to smell of cheesy feet, filly boots.
Why would you take that?
Can you believe that? Yeah.
That's it's horrendous. I'm not a fan of Stilton to start off with, but that's not good.
Apparently, it's a hit with the ladies. Oh. They love that.
Really?
Friday night
what
intel?
Type of ladies are liking smelling that then?
Is this tried and tested? Are you rubbing Stilton on your stuff before you go out, Caesar?
No, not at all.
He's got experience, old Caesar.
Oh, dear. But why do we tend to, you know, like for picnics, we tend to favour a lot in certain places the hard cheese, as opposed to, I guess, if you were in France or other European countries, you'd go for the softer cheeses like the Brie or the Camemberts or things like that.
I think it's a cultural thing, really. Mm. Yeah, I mean, obviously France, I've got some fantastic soft cheeses. You know, the Brie de Meaux that's slightly more mature is delicious. And especially when you leave it out for about an hour, it's all soft and gooey.
Yeah.
Crusty bread. Oh, fantastic.
I think one of the simplest things I ever had with a picnic was just a really fresh baguette. Just split it down the middle with some super fresh plum tomatoes. Chop them up, stick those in with a really, really kind of liquid Brie and just tear that up and... Simple as, but absolutely delicious, fresh and gorgeous.
One of the best cheeses that I had was when we went with Suzanne again to New Zealand, and this old lady called Biddy, and she's got her own cows, and she's named all the cows and stuff, and the quality, and she makes raw cheeses as well. And it's beautiful. It was honestly one of the best cheeses I've ever had, and Suzanne loved it as well. It was really intense, beautiful, kind of rich kind of flavours. And
it's surprising that New Zealand doesn't produce more cheeses, because they've got the perfect ecosystem for it. Lots of green grass, lots of fresh air, beautiful fresh water.
Yeah.
You know, and you know, they should kind of...
They're not big exporters, you're right.
Get into that a bit more, because it's some good stuff.
There is. I love New Zealand.
And I seem to see a lot of people experimenting and making their own cheeses at the moment. I've got a couple of friends kind of experimenting, and they've gone out and they've bought the rennets and everything, and they're just making it at home. I think it's something that's becoming more popular to experiment and make your own things.
And you've seen that as well in the farmers' markets. I mean, the farmers' markets that we go to, you're seeing kind of little cheese stands where they're making their own goat's milk cheeses and the different varieties, and they're amazing. I mean, they're using, you know, local milk, and they're kind of producing it locally.
It's pretty good,
and it's really good.
Yeah.
You've tried it, Russell.
Yeah.
It's really good, and I think that's another thing that when you hear in the region and they're kind of producing these cheeses that taste amazing, it's good. It's good to support that.
Do we use camel milk in cheese here? Have we got any camel milk cheeses? Does that happen?
But yeah, I've tried the Spinners have a variety. When I was trying to get off some of the milk and dairy, the alternative was the camel milk cheese, which is it's a bit kind of you need an acquired taste for it. It's not like your conventional sort of creamy sort of cheese. It's because there's not a lot of fat in the camel milk, so it's kind of bit rubbery, and it's if I'm honest, it's not an amazing tasting cheese, but it's still interesting to have to try.
So it might be something that, you never know, we'll see more of in the future, that's for sure. All right, I think we've got one more clue, have we, for our mystery ingredient? So let's do this.
Guess the ingredient.
And if you can guess today's mystery ingredient, you could be winning yourself a table for two adults and two children for the Family Friday brunch at BSK, if you can guess the mystery ingredient.
So today's mystery ingredient pairs well with herbs such as sage, chives and verbena, dairy products like sweet cream and ricotta cheese, also with beef, especially when black pepper is added. Today's mystery ingredient is popular in desserts such as Black Forest Gâteau, pie, jams and Chef Caesar's Bakewell Tart.
It's Emma sitting in for Suzanne, and in the studio with me are Chef Caesar Bartolini, Chef de Cuisine at BSK, Atlantis The Palm, Chef Russell Impiazzi, Culinary Director at Le Gourmet, and Thursday Brunch regular Riyad Hamed, the honey man from Balki's Honey. Now Caesar, you brought in some, a few people have texted in saying one of their staples and their favourites for picnics is crisps and chips. It's something we all like, but you've brought in a completely different selection. They're obviously all home and handmade. So what have you made them out of and how did you do it?
So today I brought some crisps made of beetroot. Any kind, you can get golden, red beetroot, candied, whatever you can find. Got some parsnips there, some classic potato chip crisps, and some carrot ones. Little secret to make your own homemade ones, and you had to slice in thin, and then you had to blanch them quickly in hot boiling water with a lot of salt for like a couple of seconds. Take them out, cool them down, and then dust them a little bit in rice flour on the outside, and just fry them 150 degrees in nice clean oil. And then you can sprinkle all sorts, you know, in when you dust them with your rice flour, you know. You can put spices in there and a bit of chili and different things, you know. So they're quite lovely.
So what does the rice flour do on the chips? It just helps them to crisp up, does it?
Yeah, it does. It coats them a little bit on the outside, and they stay more
so
crispy.
I've got to do this.
Look, like that crunch, right?
But I love the fact that you can literally make crisps out of a lot of different vegetables these days, and maybe people aren't thinking that much. I mean, we do see them, I hate to say it, but in the supermarket you'll see the root vegetable crisps, which I think is a good thing. But to know that you could make these at home and very easily as well.
Cheaper too.
They only take 10 minutes, to be honest, you know, and everyone has a little. I believe everyone has a little fryer at home. The electric
peeler,
ones.
So you need a potato
and a peeler. That's
yep.
it.
Do you get it? The oil. Does it have to be at a certain temperature? Any hotter than usual in terms of the oil?
No, 150 degrees is best.
Okay.
It doesn't have to be too hot for the crisps. Otherwise, they quickly burn. Without getting crispy. They're pretty easy to make.
You oven bake them as opposed to frying them, or use an air fryer instead?
Yes, you could.
Air fryer would work. Yeah.
Or in the oven, you can dry them overnight, but it will take quite a long time. You know, at a very long time, very low temperature. You know, leave them all night there and stuff. They will crisp up.
Okay, that sounds fantastic. Well, thank you so much for everything you've brought in today. It's been absolutely amazing for our picnic thing. We've got so much food left over. We're going to be here for ages, I think. I just wanted to round out with a couple of food news stories, if that's okay.
Food news.
That's something I wanted to hear what you guys thought about that. A couple served expired food at their wedding. I don't know if you've seen this story. Something old, something new, something borrowed, and something blue. We've all heard this rhyme plenty of times, but something old doesn't normally refer to what you'd serve your guests at a wedding dinner, really, to be honest with you. But one adventurous couple making their vows also vowed to keep their special day as environmentally friendly as possible. So basically, they teamed up with a waste food charity called Recycle Cambridge, and basically served up leftover food and expired food. What do you think about this?
Well, define expired. I mean, I think used by dates are kind of, they're a benchmark.
Yeah.
You know, if you're 2 years out of date, you're going to have a problem. But if you're a couple of days, if you're really salted crisps that we were just talking about are expiring today, I'm going to eat them tomorrow, you know, happily. So it depends how far it is. Is it a fresh produce? Is it a dry produce? You know, so it's. Yeah, it's an interesting one.
I'm looking at this. I'm guessing it's just expired, use-by date that have been taken out of supermarkets or a restaurant or something. That they obviously won't use it past that date, but this couple have gone, we'll use it, it's fine.
Good for them.
I think if it's for ethical reasons and they're doing it sort of ethically, and it's all about kind of like sustainability and for the environment and everything. I think it's quite good, if I'm honest. But if they're doing it because they just want to be cheek, I'm thinking, what a barefaced cheek that these people have are going to be feeding like guests expired food. So it depends what the intention is. If the intention is good and it's all about sustainability, environment, then fine. But if they're doing it wanting to be cheap, then don't invite me.
Well, the cost of it, it worked out about 40 dirhams per head for their guests.
Well, that's pretty awesome. Good. Yeah. Look, good luck for them for trying, I'll tell you. That's a good story.
And it's very trendy at the moment. Like last month only in London, they turned the rooftop of one of very famous stores for a whole month with different celebrity
it's
chefs.
Wasted, wasn't it?
Yes, Wasted. Yeah. Mm. And they come up with all these super really cool menus out of wastage.
Produce they would normally throw in the bins. Yeah. They've kind of found ways to repackage up vegetable waste and meat trimmings, and it's a great idea, wasn't it?
Fantastic, yeah.
I mean, this is a topic that comes up all the time, and we've discussed it time and time again with restaurants and supermarkets and whatever, and so much produce and food does just get thrown away because you can't use it. Why not use those offcuts and the things? There's no reason why you can't, really, is there?
No, definitely not. Just have to be creative, and you definitely can reuse pretty much everything.
I think it's worth checking out if the hashtag was Wasted London, I think. Mm. And some of the chefs come up with some really cool ideas.
Would you ever consider kind of teaming up with other chefs here and trying to do something here?
Definitely. I think it'd be a great idea.
We'll have to put a pin in that idea then. Yeah, definitely, and see how that goes. Absolutely amazing. Well, we've got to find a winner for our competition. First of all, let's find out what the answer was to the mystery ingredient. Riyadh, what was it?
It's a cherry.
It was cherries. I like Morello cherries myself. The sweet ones, they're all good. We've got to say well done to Avi, who pretty much got it straight away. So well done to you, Avi. You are winning that table for two adults and two children for the Family Friday brunch at BSK. So we will be in touch with you about that. Thank you all so, so much for joining us today on the show. And thank you very much for all the lovely picnic food. And I hope we've managed to share some great picnic ideas as well. And really, it just shows you can go be as simple or as crazy as you want when it comes to picnic food, doesn't it?
Exactly. Keep it simple and enjoy it.
Fabulous. Can't even speak now. Fabulous.
It's all that cherry bakewell.
I know, it's a cherry sitting over there staring at me. Thank you all so much for coming in.